Doug McKelvey remembers a spiritual turning point in his life. It's when somebody gave him a prayer book, a book of common prayer to use for daily devotions.
More than anything else in it, it was the prayer of confession that just struck me. And it was specifically the phrase where we're repenting for things done and things left undone. That stuck in my brain like a grain of sand in an oyster and helped to shape my theology in certain ways over the decades that followed.
This is Family Life Today for Thursday, November 26th, Thanksgiving Day in the United States. Our hosts are Dave and Ann Wilson. I'm Bob Lapine. We'll hear today about how God took Doug McKelvey on a spiritual journey from that introduction to a prayer of confession in the Anglican Book of Common Prayer. And we'll hear about how we can make every moment in our lives more holy. Stay with us. And welcome to Family Life Today. Thanks for joining us on the Thursday edition, the Thanksgiving Day edition here in the United States. And I should confess as we start today, I grew up with a prejudice. My prejudice was, this was shaped, I need to explain this. I grew up in a church where I don't remember hearing the gospel shared, but we were regular going to church, in part because I liked to sing in the choir, and they had a good high school choir, so that's where I was going. But in, I think it was 10th grade, I went through communicants class. Now, communicants class meant they were thinking about letting me into the church, right? So I had to, this was church membership. You go through the class, you learn this, then you are welcomed in and you have your first communion. Okay? So I went through this class, and one of the papers that I had to write for this class was on what things would you change about the church and why. One of the things I said is I would change these rote prayers that get prayed in church because nobody means what they're saying. They're just reading words off of a page. I thought it was in conflict with what Jesus teaches in Matthew chapter 6 about vain repetition. Don't do this vain repetition. So here's what I grew up thinking. Liturgy equals lifeless. There's no spiritual life in liturgy. It's just a form. It's just a pattern. You go through it, and at the end of the day, nothing's happened. If your spirituality is spontaneous, there's life there. But if it's formal, there's no life in that. Well, I held on to that prejudice for a long time until I was in New York City. First time I'd ever gone to New York. And I went to St. Patrick's Cathedral in New York City.
And how old were you at this time?
So I'm in my mid-30s, and I was just looking at St. Patrick's. Never seen a big cathedral like this. It was beautiful, and this was after hours. It was on a Sunday. They'd had worship services there. And somebody had left the liturgy from that service on the chair. And with my presupposition, I kind of picked it up, looking at it going, yeah, I wonder what kind of hocus pocus is in here. And I opened it up and I started reading through the prayer of confession that was in this liturgy. And I was all of a sudden struck by the fact that this prayer that was printed out here was a little more substantive in terms of confessing sin than I usually was in my spontaneous confession of sin. That this was actually a guide that would help me think more clearly and more deeply about what I ought to be talking to God about at this point. And if all I was doing was chanting the words, then clearly that's nothing. But if I'm looking at this and going, this can help guide me deeper in my spiritual journey than I would normally go on my own. And that was a paradigm shift for me to start to go, some of the things that our fathers before us knew about the Christian life, we can learn from. Now, there's balance in all of that. And the reason I tell the story is because we're going to talk today about liturgy, which is a pretty unusual subject on Family Life Today. And some of our listeners may be going, you're talking about what? Liturgy? And I'm not even sure what that means. And I'm a little afraid of it. And maybe they have my prejudice against liturgy. Did you ever think about liturgy or liturgical forms?
I didn't grow up in the church, but I do remember stepping inside a few churches and everyone stand and would repeat the liturgy. And I was confused by it. Like, what is happening? Do people mean this?
Mm-hmm.
The words were beautiful. I was struck by the depth and meaning of the words. But I also thought, do I feel this? Should I say it if I don't feel this?
Mm-hmm.
What did you have, Dave?
I remember 12 years old, Episcopal Church, standing there as a young boy with my single mom and doing liturgy, reciting it, and feeling some of the same things you did, like, do we mean this? Do
right.
we understand this? I do remember the feeling in that church.
Hmm.
This is a church that when my little brother died, Reverend Ashton was in our home to help us through that.
Mm-hmm.
And it was high church, and I missed it later.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think I understood it as a young boy. I was sort of like you, Bob. I started trying to piece it together and say, is this deep and is it meaningful? And I didn't discover it was until years later.
Yeah. Well, we've got a guy joining us today who has embraced liturgy in kind of a whole new way. In fact, he's written a book called Every Moment Holy, which is a collection of liturgies for... not for church use, but for personal use. So
for every area of your life, basically.
A liturgy for laundering, a liturgy for washing of windows, for home repair, before taking the stage. That's one maybe we should have gone through.
Yeah. And I think some moms would be thinking, what? I'm going to read this before I do my laundry? I can barely pray. How do we do this?
Exactly. So Doug McKelvey joins us. Doug, welcome to Family Life Today.
Thank you so much.
So hearing us talk about our views of liturgy, you grew up in East Texas.
I did.
Did you grow up in a liturgical tradition?
I did not. It was interesting hearing you describe your journey. Because in some ways, mine was similar, though coming from a different perspective denominationally, because I grew up very much with a suspicion of anything liturgical, of anything that seemed formalized rather than spontaneous. And it was only during the time that I was in college that really the wheels came off of the theology that I had sort of accumulated along the course of my years growing up. And I was left not knowing what to believe other than the basic fundamentals of the faith.
A crisis of faith for you?
Very much so, very much so. It was during that time that I was first introduced to the Book of Common Prayer, and more than anything else in it, it was the prayer of confession.
Really?
That just struck me. Because as I read it, I just instinctively thought, this is something I can trust. There's the weight of the history of the body of believers that have gone before me, who have crafted their theology, a scriptural theology, into an expression that can lead me, that can guide me. And it was specifically the phrase where we're repenting for things done and things left undone.
Yeah.
That stuck in my brain like a grain of sand in an oyster and helped to shape my theology in certain ways over the decades that followed.
What I would sit down to confess sin. Mm-hmm. I know I'm supposed to do this, so I should reflect. And what do I need to confess? I'm consciously thinking, okay, what bad things have I done?
Mm-hmm.
And the prayer of confession in the Book of Common Prayer, which says, Lord, we've sinned against you in thought, word, and deed. Now, I hadn't stopped to consider what bad thoughts that I had. I was just thinking, what bad things have I done? I wasn't thinking, what bad words have I said? I was just thinking action. And then I wasn't thinking things I hadn't done that I should have done, to your point, because we've sinned against you thought, word, and deed by things done and things left undone. We've not loved you with our whole hearts. We've not loved our neighbors as ourselves. All of a sudden, I'm going, oh, it's worse than I realized. My sin is a bigger deal. The categories for sin have now been expanded, not just what wrong thing did I do earlier today, but what impure thoughts have I had, or what should I have done that I ignored?
And yet it feels impersonal in some ways. If you're all standing together, you're reciting this together, it's not your personal sin necessarily. So how is it more personal?
Well, I think probably to explore that question, we should back up a little bit and maybe clear up some misunderstanding of the word liturgy. Because the reality is every church has liturgy.
Right.
Because liturgy is just a term that means the form and content and order of a church service.
So if you sing three songs and then the preacher gets up and preaches and then you say a closing prayer, that's your liturgy.
That's your liturgy. Mm. Yeah. So it's not that there are some churches with liturgy and some without.
Right.
I find it interesting in looking back at my own bias against things that were more formally liturgical when I was younger. And I would like to go back and ask my 16 and 18 and 20-year-old self, what's going on with the Lord's Prayer?
Hmm.
When the disciples come to Jesus and ask him, you know, teach us how to pray. And he tells them to pray this prayer, this beautiful prayer that is so packed with deep theological truths and meaning, and that you could spend a lifetime, and we should spend a lifetime meditating on and praying that prayer repeatedly, not as a magical incantation,
right?
Right? But as a deep expression of truth that will lead our hearts, that will form and shape our theology, that will further shape our relationship to God and to what we are to be about.
Yeah, Jesus has just said, before he teaches them to pray the Lord's Prayer, he said, don't use vain repetition. So to the extent that somebody stands up and just mindlessly recites the Lord's Prayer, they're violating what Jesus just said about prayer, right?
Right.
Should we think of the Lord's Prayer and church liturgy, or the prayer of confession we talked about, or the prayers that you include in Every Moment Holy, should we think of these less as scripts to follow and more as prompts for us in our spiritual lives?
I think for many people, that would be the most beneficial approach. I think for a lot of people, myself included, with some of the prayers that I pray weekly from the Book of Common Prayer, rather than just being a prompt, they do end up being deeply meaningful and an articulation of things that I would not be able to express in the moment apart from having that guide. Something that has been very encouraging in terms of feedback that I've had from some of the prayers in Every Moment Holy, there is this refrain of people saying, you know, our beloved dog died that we had for 12 years, and our kids were devastated and we were devastated. And we didn't know what to say, how to pray. And the liturgy for the loss of a living thing gave us the words to express what was already in our hearts, but that spontaneously we wouldn't have been able to.
So turn to that one, will you?
Sure.
Think of a family that's lost a pet or maybe it's an extended relative, a loved one, but a loss of life, and there's grief going on. And I think of Romans 8, which talks about we have groanings too deep for words. We don't know how to pray, so the Spirit prays for us. But if somebody comes along and says, this can help shape your thinking and your prayers, that could be beneficial. So just instruct us. We'll be your kids. We don't know what to do. We've just lost a pet. You explain to us, Dad, what we're about to do in reading through this together, okay?
Okay, so this is how it begins. King of creation, here was your good creature.
And then there's a moment of silence, you say in the book. Those who are gathered can center their thoughts and prepare their hearts in that moment.
Here was your good creature, O Lord, pondered and called to life by your own compassionate design.
And then the family or the kids or whoever would respond and say, here was your good creature, and here were spaces and the days we shared, enjoying the glad company and cheerful fellowship of a fellow creature.
We made room in our lives, room in our home, room in our hearts to welcome your unique creation. And we gave your good creature the name.
And you'd insert the name.
We were filled with a right and fond affection for another living thing your hands had made, delighting daily in its presence.
Now this season of our shared lives is ended by death.
Our hearts are unprepared for such loss, and we are deeply grieved.
And it goes on from there, continues actually for one, two, couple pages. This is, again, to help guide the folks who have experienced the loss into processing it in a godly way, in a biblical way, to think about loss and life and God and death rightly.
Right. And I now recognize that in the very process of prayerfully thinking through a particular subject like this one we're talking about now, the grieving for the loss of a pet, in thinking through that, wanting to understand scripturally where our hope lies in that and how to navigate this process of grief and how to help our kids navigate this process of grief and find hope even in the midst of it. I now recognize that the Holy Spirit is just as present in that thoughtful crafting and thinking through of a prayer and the creation of it as the Holy Spirit is present in a spontaneously offered prayer, and that it really has so much more to do in the praying of it with the posture of our hearts and our willingness and ability to enter into that communion with our Creator in the midst of the moment.
Well, Dave and I are in the weekly rhythm of preparing sermons for churches. And if we said, you know, the only really valid sermon would be one that came spontaneously. You just need to get up and, right, in the moment, just come up spontaneously with whatever you're going to say, because anything that you prepared ahead of time, it would be formal. Well, yeah, there'd be some really bad sermons.
There would, and there are. And there are some that would say that's the only time the Holy Spirit would lead a sermon, and it's both and, right? You know, it is interesting in the foreword that Andrew Peterson wrote. I mean, something caught me as I was reading it, which is exactly what you're just saying, and we sort of just experienced it. He says these words. He says, "There are no unsacred moments. There are only sacred moments, and moments we have forgotten are sacred." And I love your title, "Every Moment Holy," is like every moment is pregnant, you know, and you're sort of asking us to stop and center. We were walking up here to walk in the studio and bumped into a woman, and she has used your book, and we said, "How have you used it?" And she said, "It centers me."
My wife does laundry once a week. I mean, I'm just imagining the rhythm of a wife saying, "Oh, it's laundry day. I need to get out the book Every Moment Holy and do the liturgy for laundry." I mean, that just seems so odd, right? I mean, you wrote it. Does that not seem odd to you that you'd get out and do the liturgy for laundry before you wash the clothes?
I can recognize the part of it that seems odd. I think the what seems like an ironic tension at first. But I think that tension exists for us to the degree that our vision of God's sovereignty over every part of our life and his presence in every moment is deficient. The reality, I think all of us would agree, that God is present in every moment, that there is nothing lost in God's economy. And everything that we do, no matter how mundane and necessary in our lives, takes its context in the larger story of redemption, and it's all going somewhere. It's all going to the new heavens and the new earth.
And our lives now and the parts of our lives now are not disconnected from that. We experience them as disconnected sometimes. But that's why I wrote this book, because I wanted to remind myself. And I thought if I could remind myself, maybe it would also serve to remind other people.
Yeah. And I'll add this, you know, even looking at the title and walking through your prayers in here, it reminds you what you just said. Every moment is holy.
And it's inviting God into every moment.
And we have a tendency to think it's holy. It's a holy moment when it's epic. I mean, I've been in the NFL for 33 seasons. I went through 12 different coaches with the Detroit Lions, and every single coach wanted liturgy before we went on the field. They didn't know it, but they wanted me to lead the team in the Lord's Prayer before we walked on the field. Why? Because this is epic. They're livelihoods are on it. It's the most important thing in the world. We have to pray the Lord's Prayer, right? That's liturgy to them. And we don't do that when we do the laundry. We don't. It's like, no, every moment is like an NFL game. It's pregnant with meaning. So stop and center yourself.
I would hope our listeners would go online, and there's information about your book available. We've got it in our Family Life Today Resource Center. But I can imagine a family getting something like this and going, this is so different than anything that has been a part of our family's spiritual journey. And just saying, let's once a week pick one of these prayers, something that's aligned with what's going on in our lives, and let's read it, and we'll read slowly, and we'll talk about it as we read it, and let's just see what it's like to bring God into the laundry. Think of how that would shape the way your children think differently about life and about God and how all of that comes together. Again, we've got copies of Doug's book, Every Moment Holy, in our Family Life Today Resource Center. You can order it from us online at familylifetoday.com. And by the way, it's a beautiful book. It's something that your family will enjoy looking at. Order it from us at familylifetoday.com or call to order at 1-800-FL-TODAY. The book, again, is Every Moment Holy, online at familylifetoday.com or call 1-800-358-6329. That's 1-800 F as in family, L as in life, and then the word today. Well, on this Thanksgiving Day, of course, we are all thinking about the things for which we are thankful. And one of the things we're thankful is the privilege we have of connecting with you every day. Some of you on this local radio station, some of you are listening via podcast or through the Family Life app. Some of you are simply telling Alexa to play Family Life Today. However we're connecting, thanks for making us a part of your commute or your jogging or your time around the house. However you listen, we're glad to have you along. And I'm imagining that for some of you are not regular listeners, but because of the Thanksgiving Day holiday and your schedule, you have tuned in and listened to this program. If you're a new listener, welcome. If you'd like to find out more about Family Life, go to our website, familylifetoday.com. Learn about the resources we have available, about the events we host, and all that we're doing at Family Life to effectively develop godly marriages and families. And for those of you who are longtime listeners, the reason you've been able to connect with Family Life through the years is because of friends of this ministry who make this program possible. Listeners like you who donate so that Family Life Today can continue with our work of effectively developing godly marriages and families. If you are a regular listener and you've never made a donation, on Thanksgiving Day would be a good day to say thank you to Family Life and make a donation. You can do that online at familylifetoday.com. And when you do, we'd like to return the thanks by sending you a set of Christmas tree ornaments you can use with your kids during the Christmas season to help introduce them to the one whose birth we celebrate in December. We call this the 12 Names of Christmas, and the ornaments are our thank you gift to you when you make a donation today. Again, you can do that online at familylifetoday.com. And again, thanks for listening today. It's always good to have you along, and I hope you are enjoying your Thanksgiving holiday. And I hope you can join us again tomorrow when we're going to talk about some of the everyday moments in life and how we can be careful to see God at work in those moments and acknowledge his work in those moments. Doug McKelvey's going to be back with us again. Hope you can be here as well. I want to thank our engineer today, Keith Lynch, along with our entire broadcast production team. On behalf of our hosts, Dave and Ann Wilson, I'm Bob Lapine. We will see you back next time for another edition of Family Life Today. Family Life Today is a production of Family Life of Little Rock, Arkansas, a CREW ministry. Help for today, hope for tomorrow.